Kaczynski against Bianchi. Ms. Lee.
Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel. May it please the Court. Kirk Chernowsky was employed as an assistant state's attorney in the McHenry County State's Attorney's Office from January 23, 2006 until his termination on December 2, 2011. From the time of his initial employment until 2011, Mr. Chernowsky enjoyed an exemplary service record in the state's attorney's office. His personnel file was filled with positive feedback and commendations, and he received good performance reviews at least annually with attendant salary increases. In February of 2011, Plaintiff Chernowsky was subpoenaed to appear before the McHenry County Grand Jury in the then-pending investigation of the elected state's attorney, Louis Bianchi. Plaintiff gave sworn testimony before the grand jury concerning the allegation that Bianchi had improperly influenced or arranged a negotiated plea in a case for which plaintiff had principal responsibility. On February 24, 2011, Bianchi was indicted for official misconduct relating to that investigation. In April of 2011, the special prosecutor charged with the prosecution of the elected state's attorney publicly listed Plaintiff Chernowsky as a prosecution witness. In July of 2011, plaintiff was served with a subpoena to testify in the prosecution's case in the trial of Bianchi. And in fact, in August of 2011, plaintiff testified in the prosecution's case in chief. After the April publication of Plaintiff Chernowsky as a prosecution witness, in June, July, in September of 2011, Bianchi began retaliating against plaintiff by placing trumped-up negative feedback in his personnel file. And on December 2, 2011, plaintiff was summoned to Bianchi's office, confronted with transcripts of his grand jury and trial testimony, and terminated. The district court erred in its dismissal of plaintiff's claim in prematurely finding qualified immunity for the defendants, and in overextending the Supreme Court's holding in Garcetti to find that plaintiff's speech was not protected by the First Amendment as it was made pursuant to his official duties. The law is clear that because immunity is largely based on the specific facts of a case, dismissal at the pleading stage is generally inappropriate.
So let me ask you this question. Is it your view that essentially as a matter of law, testimony before a grand jury pursuant to subpoena or testimony at a trial pursuant to subpoena is outside the scope of the Garcetti rule?
Not necessarily as a bright line rule. Definitely with the specific facts of this case, where a person as part of their actual job duties was required to appear in front of a grand jury, for example, a felony review assistant state's attorney who routinely appeared and testified pursuant to their official duties, their actual duties, in front of a grand jury or even at a trial, then I think that would be within the scope of employment. Here, the compelled testimony of Plaintiff Chernowsky as a citizen about his duties, but not in the course of his duties, we maintain is speech as a private citizen. It was never within the job duties of plaintiff to testify before the grand jury or to testify in trials.
Okay. So your sense is that any citizen would have the obligation to respond to a grand jury subpoena and testify about what they happen to know about, whether they got that knowledge from their job or elsewhere?
Certainly.
Now, as I understand it, one of the things that led to the firing in Garcetti against Sabalos itself was testimony. How is your position reconcilable with Garcetti on that very point?
I think Garcetti is factually distinguishable for a number of reasons. First, the parties in Garcetti agreed that testimony was made pursuant to the job duties. I believe in Garcetti the speech was both testimony and a memorandum that were written pursuant to the, similar to a felony review position, review duties of the assistant state's attorney. That within the context of that attorney's job, a review of an incoming case was made, certain conclusions were arrived at and reported to superiors and elsewhere. The parties in that case agreed that that was done within the scope of employment. Here, Mr. Chernowski testified pursuant to a subpoena both before the grand jury and at the trial of the state's attorney as a private citizen about his duties. And there is a distinction in the Garcetti opinion between employees speaking pursuant to their duties and those that speak about their duties. I believe that plaintiffs, in this case, Plaintiff Chernowski's speech is similar to that of the plaintiff in Morales versus Jones, where that police officer testified in a civil deposition about occurrences, things that had happened during his job, and this court held was protected, not speech given pursuant to his job duties, but about them. I think the same distinction can be made here. Even if the court deems that a qualified immunity analysis is appropriate in this case at the pleading stage, plaintiff did plead facts to establish a constitutional deprivation and to overcome the qualified immunity defense in that that constitutional right was clearly established. In the district court's ruling that plaintiff spoke pursuant to his official duties, the court relied heavily on the Garcetti decision. As I've said, I believe Garcetti is factually distinguishable. And the Garcetti court itself went to great lengths to narrow its holding and caution against excessively broad job descriptions. I would submit to the court that the district court, in its opinion, when it cites to the state statute that defines the duties of a state's attorney, is using exactly the kind of sweeping, excessively broad job description that the Garcetti court rejected. The statutory definition of the duties to commence and prosecute all actions flies in the face of the Garcetti opinion, which recommends the use of a practical inquiry about an employee plaintiff's actual job duties, an undertaking that was never made in this case.
So Mr. Chernowski is being called, I'll phrase this as a question, does the record show that he's called as a fact witness for the grand jury and for the trial?
Yes, I believe that it does. The Garcetti court noted in its analysis of speech, one, that the subject of the speech, specifically that it's about a person's official job duties, is not dispositive. Again, the court made a distinction between testifying pursuant to your duties and about your duties, and specifically indicated only that an employee speaks pursuant to his duties when he is fulfilling a responsibility to his employer, he is testifying to speech that was created by the employer, or when the speech is part of the tasks, the ordinary tasks of his employment for which he's paid.
So that's how you bring in Tamayo against Blagojevich? Because, of course, that person was testifying, although before a legislative body.
Before a legislative committee. And we characterize that plaintiff as a professional testifier. Again, I think that there's a factual distinction between the testimony offered by Plaintiff Chernowski in this case and in Tamayo. I believe that Tamayo was testifying pursuant to job duties. That was an employee who was in a senior administrative position and had supervisory authority, was testifying to supervisory oversights of her office. This plaintiff, Chernowski, was not fulfilling a responsibility to his employer. He was a citizen honoring the subpoena served upon him, which required him to provide testimony about his employment, about his official duties. And his right to that speech, his right to speak as a citizen about his employment, free from retaliation by defendants, is a clearly recognized, established constitutional right. Finally, the defendant's allegation that the policymaker corollary, though the district court did not rely on it in its decision, defeats plaintiff's claim is misplaced. I would submit that the policymaker corollary does not apply when speech does not in any way implicate the employee's politics or substantive policy viewpoints. That simply isn't the case here. This is not a wide sweeping policy position of the plaintiff. Plaintiff was testifying, pursuant to a subpoena, about observations made in the course of his duties, not about his politics or his substantive policy viewpoints. Accordingly, the policymaker corollary is inapplicable, does not defeat plaintiff's claim. I believe that the facts of this case are analogous to that of Marshall versus Porter County Plan Commission, where this court held that a government employer could not terminate a policymaking employee for speech criticizing her employer's abuse of the office because the speech did not involve her political or policy viewpoints. And the same is true here. In sum, plaintiff adequately pled his Section 1983 claims, and the district court erred in dismissing them prematurely on the issue of qualified immunity and in finding that the speech was made pursuant to his official duties. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lee. Ms. Kelly.
May it please the court. My name is Donna Kelly of the McHenry County State's Attorney's Office. I'm here today on behalf of the Appellees. We come before this court today requesting that you affirm the judgment of the district court, which dismissed the plaintiff's complaint in its entirety.
So what was Mr. Chernowski supposed to do when he got the subpoena from the grand jury?
Your Honor,
say nothing?
He needed to comply with that subpoena.
He needed to comply with it. Not
correct.
Because he was an officer in the McHenry County State's Attorney's Office, because he was a citizen of the state of Illinois.
Your Honor, irrespective of...
Well, right. I mean, what I said is right. I mean, if you
correct.
Got a subpoena, if I got a subpoena, you would either comply or you would be in contempt.
That is correct.
And so did he have the option of not telling the truth before the grand jury?
He did not.
No. So I find it very difficult to extend the holding of Garcetti to a situation where the speech in question is speech that could be compelled from any citizen, indeed any person within the jurisdiction of the state of Illinois. And the grand jury is, of course, entitled to ask whatever questions it thinks appropriate to ask for the matter that it's investigating.
As the district court found, Your Honor, the plaintiff's obligation and duties here to comply and cooperate with the criminal investigation of the state's attorney arose from his duties and obligations.
No, we just agreed that it didn't. We just agreed that it arose from the fact that he gets a subpoena from the grand jury, or for that matter, the trial court. It doesn't really matter. It's a subpoena from a court. And his obligation to comply with that subpoena starts and ends with the fact that he is a human being within the jurisdiction of that court, within the state of Illinois, I'll say right now. And he could be, you know, a lawyer, he could be an accountant, he could be anybody, and he would have to comply with that subpoena. I don't see how his duty to comply with the subpoena has anything to do with the fact that he's in the state's attorney's office.
Even if the subpoena did not exist, Your Honor, irrespective.
No, but the subpoena is everything. The subpoena, you can't assume away the case.
As the district court found, as the district judge found.
Well, we're here reviewing the district court. We've read the district court's opinion. We respect the district court's opinions. But our job is to review what they did and to ask the question whether what the district court understood is consistent with our best understanding of Garcetti and other case law in this area.
And I would submit, Your Honor, that the court's finding was indeed consistent with the principles that are enunciated in the Garcetti case, as well as this court's precedent.
Ms. Kelly, about 5 years ago, in a case called Rankin versus Gregory, said that determining what falls within the scope of an employee's duties is a practical exercise that focuses on, quote, the duties of an employee actually is expected to perform. So is it your position that he should have anticipated as an assistant state's attorney that someday he would be called to testify in a criminal investigation before a grand jury? That's when you signed on yourself as an ASA, that's you. That's in the, your, it's a practical consideration. Every ASA assumes that he's going to be or she's going to be called to testify.
Our duties and obligation are to provide for the effective administration of justice.
It's like
in
paying your taxes, right? Is that part of your duties, that you should pay your Illinois income tax and your federal tax? Is that the kind of practical assessment we should make?
You have a special duty when you become a sworn assistant state's attorney to uphold the laws of the state of Illinois.
But I think where Judge Flom is going, I don't understand how state's attorneys have a greater duty to respond to the kind of subpoenas that we're talking about than anybody else. There are no, like, extra fines if you don't comply, are there?
Your Honor, may I speak to Garcetti versus Ceballos, the circumstances
right,
of that?
Right, because in Garcetti, interestingly, the court's discussion focuses entirely on the two internal memoranda.
True.
It really puts off to one side the testimonial issue, and there's a remand, further proceedings. We have cases like Fairley against Fairmont. We have cases like Morales. So there's a lot.
In the Garcetti case, Mr. Ceballos' testimony, which occurred at a motion to suppress for the defense, would likely not have occurred had he not prepared that internal memorandum.
But the point is the court wasn't focusing on that. The court doesn't talk about that. The court talks about the internal memoranda that he writes questioning, you know, what was going on with these affidavits.
It also seems that, so far as I can tell in Garcetti, the testimony was about the internal memorandum. So you wouldn't get to sue about the internal memorandum by testifying about it. Is there any claim here that the plaintiff was testifying about a memo that he wrote at work?
No, Your Honor. The testimony surrounded a plea negotiation.
Now, Judge Wood mentioned Fairley, and I noticed your brief doesn't discuss Fairley. Do you have any reaction to Fairley? Because we certainly said in Fairley that this kind of testimony is outside the scope of Garcetti.
Well, Your Honor, again, here where it's an assistant state's attorney.
I didn't ask anything about here. I asked about Fairley. Do you have anything to say about Fairley?
I do not, Your Honor, outside of, again, the job duties of an assistant state's attorney.
But Fairley says that Garcetti doesn't apply to testimony given by jail guards in certain inmate lawsuits. Well, okay, there are a few differences of fact, but testimony, I mean, that's the critical fact.
Your Honor, and again, in that situation, those are civil depositions, not
criminal
investigation.
Right, but we just said about 2 weeks ago, it doesn't really matter. It's criminal, civil. You have an obligation to respond to the court processes of either type. This was in the Burge case. This happened to be reiterated. I don't know why it's a lesser duty to cooperate with the criminal processes of the state of Illinois than civil. What sense would that make?
Your Honor, the duty that Mr. Chernowski had as an assistant state's attorney was a duty to cooperate with a criminal investigation, to follow the laws of the state of Illinois if he became aware of misconduct by any employee of the state's attorney's office, to relate that to criminal investigators, and to cooperate with any criminal investigation. In Morales versus Jones, this court analyzed three instances of speech. You analyzed the speech of Officer Kotlatsky reporting to Officer Morales that he became aware of a deputy chief's purported misconduct regarding harboring her fugitive brother. That speech you analyzed under the principles of Garcetti and found that it was not protected free speech. Similarly, when Officer Morales in turn reported that information over to the district attorney, that too did not constitute protected free speech because it was made pursuant to his official responsibilities as a law enforcement officer to cooperate and to report information relevant to a criminal investigation.
But Morales says that a public employee engages in protected speech when he gives testimony pursuant to a subpoena.
In a civil deposition.
But
and the distinction,
you have not explained to me one reason why you're going to protect testimony in a civil deposition and you're not going to protect testimony either actually in a courtroom, for which civil depositions, I might add, often substitute, or before a grand jury. Can you explain to me why you would draw that line?
I would, Your Honor. Because of the principles under Garcetti versus
Sedaris. No. I want like a first principle. Why are we going to give greater protection to public employees' cooperation in civil, compelled cooperation, I would say,
because
compliance with a subpoena for a civil deposition than we would for a grand jury?
Because the crux of the Morales versus Jones holding in regard to that deposition was that it was a civil deposition unrelated to the police officer's official duties. And that's the crux of why this court distinguished it from the situation in Garcetti versus Ceballos.
I don't think that that's a fully accurate account of Morales, because the subject matter of the testimony can be connected to employment.
This court determined, however, that it was a civil deposition, that it was not related to his job duties as a law enforcement officer. If Officer Morales had been testifying before a grand jury against the deputy chief whom he accused of having harbored her fugitive brother, or if he had testified at a criminal trial against the deputy chief at a criminal trial,
then he can be fired for that testimony.
The speech would not be protected under Garcetti.
That's a difficult rule to get your head around.
Under the holding in Garcetti versus Ceballos, the speech would not be protected. In Garcetti versus Ceballos, the United States Supreme Court...
Is it your contention that the plaintiff was fired because of the simple fact that he testified in response to the subpoena, or was he fired because he testified falsely?
Your Honor, at this juncture, we have to assume all well-pled facts are taken as true, and according to the plaintiff's complaint, he is alleging that he was fired for his untruthful testimony.
I asked what your position was. Presumably, did you file an answer?
We have not.
Oh, all right. Well.
Your Honors, under Tamayo versus Blagojevich, Ms. Tamayo, who was the interim administrator of the Illinois Gaming Board, testified before a legislative committee as to misconduct by the then governor of the state of Illinois.
But she was testifying in an oversight hearing before the committee with jurisdiction over her agency. You know, if you're a C-SPAN fan, you know, you can see people doing that sort of thing all the time. Eric Holder is over there talking to the judiciary committees, other cabinet, you know, Kathleen Sebelius is over talking about whatever she needs to talk about. All of these agency people devote a significant amount of time to communications with their oversight committee. I don't have any problem myself seeing that as part of the job description. I don't see that carrying over to Mr. Chernowski. That's the problem.
Well, and Mr. Chernowski was cloaked with the duties of an assistant state's attorney.
If it had been one of the secretaries in the office subpoenaed, perhaps, you know, because this individual keeps financial records and the grand jury's looking into fraud cases, the secretary would have to testify before the grand jury. The secretary isn't commencing cases and prosecuting if it's your next-door neighbor who is testifying about odd cars pulling up at strange times of the night. Your neighbor has to testify. I just have so much trouble seeing how testifying before a grand jury or in trial.
There's a line in a very famous case involving testimony or evidence from governmental officials. The line is in the United States against Nixon, and it is the public has a right to every man's evidence. That is, you have a right to... You have an obligation to give your evidence, whether you're a governmental official or not.
That is true, Your Honor. And Assistant District Attorney Ceballos had a duty as a public officer to relate exculpatory information to the defense.
He has no greater or lesser duty as a public official than every man. That's the point of the line in Nixon.
Correct. And, Your Honor, the precedent, the way it stands now, under Garcetti versus Ceballos, where an assistant district attorney who had an ethical duty to relate that a police officer may have lied in the affidavit for a search warrant, the United States Supreme Court has said that is not protected free speech. So under, if that were to be extended to and not extended to testimony before a grand jury or before a trial, often it would prevent assistant district attorneys and police officers from being forthright and communicating in criminal investigations. There is a discrepancy. If this court were to hold that speech given in a grand jury and speech given in a criminal trial by a police officer or a prosecutor is protected free speech, but the speech that's underlying that, the communications that those public officials make before that case goes in a courtroom is not protected free speech, would lead to an absurd consequence because you'd have an incentive
just
for law
enforcement. Just the distinction between Garcetti and the rest of the world. Garcetti says that things you do on the job are not covered by the First Amendment, and things you do off the job are, even if it's the same person.
What Garcetti says is that if it is done pursuant to one's official duties, then it is not protected free speech. And what Assistant District Attorney Ceballos did in that particular case was memorialize what he believed were falsehoods in an affidavit for search warrant. And when the district attorney transferred him out to a separate area of the county and moved him from handling deputy calendar position down to a trial deputy and took away his homicide cases, the Supreme Court stated that official communications have official consequences, and the Supreme Court did not find that his First Amendment rights were violated. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Counsel. Anything further, Ms. Lee?
Very briefly, Bob.
This plaintiff was speaking pursuant to a subpoena. The defendants, if you're speaking pursuant to your job duties, then it's not protected. That's well settled. This plaintiff was not speaking pursuant to his official duties. We concur with the court's focus on the subpoena served on this plaintiff. Notably, when defendant was asked if the plaintiff should have anticipated receiving a grand jury subpoena or a subpoena to testify at a criminal trial, there was no answer given. That's because the answer is no. Garcetti indicates that it should be a practical inquiry, and no practical inquiry of this plaintiff's job duties was made because this case was dismissed on a Rule 12b-6 motion to dismiss. No answer was filed because we were at the very first pleading stage. The dismissal was premature and made an error, and we respectfully request that this court reverse it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.